Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, high above the Art Deco window that is the Eastern Columbia. We are poolside this very morning. I'm here with my co-host, as always, on your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, Mr. Phil Lernes, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Dean Haglund. I didn't actually know that the music had stopped playing and that it was time to sit down.
It's time to sit down and stop the dancing from that generic song that we have that has been now used by other bar commercials, and it's on the NFL sports wrap-up. I think there's been a number
of times.
A sausage thing. Yeah, so we're looking
very
for new...
nervous that you're both... Invite our guests to sit down.
Oh, yes. We have a guest, Jody Orton. Please sit down.
Thank
in our
you,
lovely...
I'm not actually technically a guest so much as a co-presenter.
A co-presenter.
It's part of the co-presenter scenario as introduced to me on the midweek drive on Siren 107.3 FM in Lincolnshire.
For those fans who follow Phil Lernes everywhere he goes, you'll recognize, of course, Jody from being the co-host on his other show.
She is the co-presenter. The
co-presenter, yeah, not the co-host.
American Dream Team.
I certainly am. That's my new show.
What is the American Dream Team?
The Jody? American Dream Team is basically... It's a love of all things American.
Oh, well, I mean, you're standing in it.
I'm doing a degree in American studies. So's Jack Harrison. Why wouldn't we want to do a show related to everything American?
Wait, you can get a degree in American studies?
Of course.
What do you learn?
Oh, everything. We study Americans. And
top to bottom.
Here, talk about them.
And I think the question that inspires me to ask is, Dean Haglund, would you please sit down?
Yeah, I was going to go over here and get a chair.
So Jody is staying out here in Santa Monica. She's out here conducting all manner of interviews, taking Los Angeles by storm.
Uh-huh.
Came here on the Big Blue Bus.
The Big Blue Bus. I certainly did.
How was that?
How did stack up with...
British Transit.
With British public transportation. Yeah,
well, I would say it's a lot more... It was very packed when I first got on, you know, on Ocean Avenue in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
There was like two people on the bus. And then by the time we got down here to downtown LA, it was absolutely heaving.
Yes.
So, but, you know, it's a lot cheaper. It's a lot cheaper for me to get all the way down here to downtown LA.
No, we are big proponents, big advocates, big users of public transportation. However,
in Los Angeles, yeah.
That said, I've had a rather interesting week. Thursday, I took the Glendale B line.
Oh, you did?
Up towards JPL.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A swanky old bus, one of the little smaller buses.
Smaller ones.
Really comfortable, truly swanky, probably 30 years old.
Yeah.
It caught fire going up that big hill.
Because that's a steep hill.
We're driving through Montrose, and I notice we're on fire. I'm in the back near the fire. There's only two other customers. They're up near the front. So I decide not to say anything because I'm very concerned about getting to my destination on time.
I see.
And I feel that stopping because the bus is on fire will not enable me to get there on time.
That's true.
So I say nothing, thinking, look, if we get to the top of the hill...
That is all. They can shut it off.
We can put it out
and
then
just
coast downhill.
Yeah, as one would.
So we make it a couple more miles before cars start forcing us off the road to get the driver's attention. You're on fire.
Right.
He looks back, then looks at me, and I kind of give him a chagrined, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know it's on fire, but I'm late.
So then I'm taking Amtrak this weekend.
Oh, good for
also
you.
Mass Transit.
Yes, and it's our rail system.
Yeah, I'm well versed with the rail system in Pennsylvania.
Oh, there you go.
I get a call from Amtrak, the good people, a call telling me that it's late. I didn't even need to do a train status. Now that's service.
That is service.
Yeah, your train was supposed to be 5:10. Don't bother showing up before 7. Okay, so I show up 7. It's now been canceled entirely, so I'm going to have to go later on. What happened? The train caught fire.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's you. You're the fire starter.
I'm not getting in any kind of transportation.
You see what this is?
With you.
What's your sign?
In a car last night, two other people. Technically, that makes it, I guess, mass transit.
Yep.
I may have been driving. Check engine light came on immediately.
Oh, my God.
Stayed on the whole time.
And you know what's weird? Right now on this show, you are on fire, mister. That's See?
It really is.
Look at that. 4-4 right
Never
there.
Never were we more on fire, Dean Haglund, than during Friday morning when we were live on Actors E Chat Show.
Actor E's Chat Show.
A one-hour live internet-based television show.
Yes.
I did two segments with the host, ETN. Then you did two segments.
I did.
And then we did a couple segments together. Though when I say I did two segments, it was two segments of me answering questions. It was like the Newlywed Game.
I don't know
if they have the Newlywed Game in the UK.
No, they
don't.
But
this is a game where one partner predicts what the other partner would say in answer to the question.
Right.
Because my whole first two segments, all the host wanted to know was, what does Dean Haglund think about that?
That's right. All she could do was that it was the anticipation of me showing up for my two segments afterwards. Was just you were sort of like, is Dean Haglund in the room? Yeah. Is he really coming?
And then by the time you got there, it was a little bit anticlimactic.
Totally.
Because she'd used all her questions.
She already knew. She knew all the answers. I had nothing fresh because you knew. So I am surprised that when you do screenings by yourself without me, people come up and say, I really like the X-Files. Like to you.
Oh,
like,
yes.
I'm a big fan of the X-Files. And you go, yes, so am I. Like, yes. Why are they telling you that?
Well, you know, this is at the trip to Bountiful, I think I told you, in Costa Mesa, standing outside South Coast Rep. There's a character in this play. It's one of the most American of plays. And
yes.
He writes Horton Foote. These people spotted me outside afterwards and said, the sheriff. Now, the sheriff is one of my nicknames, so I'm kind of used to this. I'm just not used to them being, you know, 70-year-old women.
Right.
Oh, don't kid yourself. Yes.
Yeah, yes, you are, sir.
Still not at South Coast Rep in public,
yeah,
because
right.
I thought, really? MySpace? Still coming back? These women said, look, the sheriff. And they all came out to tell me how good I was in the play that they'd just seen.
Even though
I'm not in the play. Even though I'm not a 70-year-old actor such as the man who plays the sheriff
right.
in that play. And even though I was standing right next to a billboard for that actor starring in the forthcoming Christmas Carol.
Oh, right.
And so I kept trying to explain, I'm not the sheriff. I'm not him. And they went, oh, we understand. Well, you're a marvelous actor, and you played the sheriff very well. No, I'm not trying to show the distinction between actor and role.
No.
What I mean is I'm not actually in the play.
Right.
I'm not him.
Right.
And finally
still.
They seem to get it, and then the smallest of them kind of tugged on my shoulder. This sweet older lady tugged on my shoulder and said, you know, I've seen the film version. You're much better.
Ah.
So now some people could be disturbed maybe to be confused for a 70-year-old actor
no.
when they are a few decades away from being that age. Me, I just think I've got at least a good 30 years ahead of me of taking credit for that dude's work.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not follow that guy around? Just hang
yeah.
around every like curtain call, every stage door, sign autographs, get his pen name down.
Who would you do it. Have you ever been mistaken for anyone, Jodie Orton?
No, I haven't been mistaken for anybody, but I did used to get told a lot that you looked like Winona Ryder when I was
Winona Ryder?
When you were shoplifting.
Yes.
Yeah.
All
the time. When I'm shoplifting, I always get confused with
right.
Winona Ryder.
Well, I yeah. could see that.
Yeah?
Yeah?
And you know, we are very close to Johnny Depp's condo. He may be getting reports right now that Winona is
on the roof. Exactly. She's flipped after their relationship from the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, he had this tattoo done of Winona Ryder.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when they split up, he kind of had half of it erased, so it read Winona forever, and now it reads Wino forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so cool.
I think he planned that ahead of time. I think he knew that the relationship might not well last.
This is going back many years now, probably almost 20 years, but whenever it was that their relationship ended, but at a premiere in Westwood.
Yes.
Back when, I think I was in film school there, or when I was doing media work there, and Johnny Depp was walking the red carpet. And one of my buddies shouts out to him, how'd that Winona Forever tattoo working out for you? And he was so cool. He actually found that funny.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, or at least did a really good impression of someone who found that funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is pretty
cool.
But
he's an actor, so.
And
I could see
more than that, he's a star. And that's the kind
the
of
The key
thing
to that, difference, yeah.
yeah.
Be cool under that sort of pressure.
Because really, he is one of those stars, much like a Robert Downey Jr., in the sense that it doesn't matter how many, quote-unquote, failures he's had. Because remember, for a long time, Johnny Depp couldn't do a movie that made any box office.
Yeah, he was stinking out the place.
But the goodwill towards him never ceased.
And they were like always creative projects that were really interesting, really creative character choices. And you got to love that in a guy who could have gone like, you know, from straight from Jump Street, 21
Jump Street. Jump Street. I love
like
21
the heartthrob.
Jump Street.
He could have just been, he could have been Richard Grieco now.
Oh, there's come on. I love Richard Grieco. Where is he? I miss Booker.
Seriously?
Come on.
I think we could go down onto the streets and find him.
I think we found the next American Studies thesis. Where is Richard Grieco?
Grieco, Johnny Depp
it's
comparison.
It's one of the great metaphysical.
I'm going to make that my aim to find that before I leave L.A. next week. Where is Richard Grieco?
I swear we could probably go to three restaurants and a bar and he will show up because I think he's a fair regular at a couple places that I've heard of. That was back in the 90s. I don't know if he's still there. As
well,
you know,
maybe he's still hanging out at the same places like the Peach Pit.
It could be. Yeah. I auditioned for his stellar movie Tomcat, where he is half cat, half man. Did you not see that one?
I didn't see that one, no.
Oh, and he had some sort of, and he was some sort of cross genetic breed with a tomcat that was in heat. So he was sort of like this kind of vampire, but he didn't kill. He just like banged women like a tomcat in bars. Shot in Vancouver.
Sounds like a classy film.
Oh, it was a
classic
Richard Grieco fantastic thing. I know all his, without even looking at IMDb, I could just rattle off Richard Grieco roles.
Now, as we do, because we say that it is your Chilpack Hollywood.
It is your Chilpack Hollywood.
We, of course, always try to address anything that our listeners send to us or write to us about. And wanted to follow up on a discussion we had last week about Wingnuts.
Oh, yes.
Remember your Twitter followers accused the truth is out there not of revealing the truth, but of obscuring it beneath all the wingnuts that we give voice to in the film.
Right.
And we addressed that, I think, most admirably last week. And in fact, our friend Mark Bennett from the UK.
Yes.
Not from the UK, actually from Canada.
He's from Canada, but lives in Brighton.
Lived and worked in the UK for quite some time, an excellent journalist, and an interview subject himself in The Truth Is Out There.
Yeah.
Who makes an indelible contribution to the film. He had a fantastic idea for a line of T-shirts, Dean, that maybe we should make up.
Really?
Of wingnuts. And, you know, all the people who got derided for the crazy things that they said for being wingnuts that turned out to be right.
Ah.
Turned out to be, because, after all, every innovative thinker at one point or another,
was
and probably most of the time, were written off. As
wingnuts. Crazy wingnuts.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Wouldn't that be kind of cool?
That is kind of cool.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
If you make a T-shirt, I'll wear it.
Will you?
Yeah. I'm a bit of a wingnut myself.
We are going to be making up some Chilpack Hollywood Hour T-shirts.
That's
in
right.
The next few weeks.
Well, I think
we
got everybody's Christmas gift already planned out.
Yeah, we do.
Don't forget, I'm leaving a week on Tuesday.
Okay.
So you have to get me to
So we
to
will have it. Those done. We'll step up production.
They're not going to like implode after the holidays. They'll still be good next year, you know.
They won't implode?
No.
Oh,
get
okay.
you one in time for the opening games
of the Olympics.
Of the London Games.
That's right.
Okay.
That'll be what you can wear.
I'm actually coming to London right after the Olympics are over.
Wow.
But while the Art Cultural Festival is still on, but just before the Special Olympics start.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody who tells me that has gone around the world to work Olympic Games said the best time is right after everybody leaves, because you still have all the staff in the hotels and everybody who overbought thinking that they would sell tons of food and stuff like that suddenly start discounting like mad, and it'll be 50% off everything in London. Nobody will be there. There'll be all of this extra staff and personnel that have all been trained to be highly courteous and professional. They'll still be there for the last 2 weeks because they let go at the end of the month. And it's before the Special Olympics come in, so there's a whole new onslaught of people taking up hotels. So there's a two-week window, and that the Olympiad Cultural Festival still goes on. So you could still have Ryan What's-His-Face coming and saying Shakespeare lines to me on the street as is part of the art festival. Did you know he's doing that?
No, I didn't know that.
There's some actor hired who's going to go randomly up and down the streets of London and just go up to people and recite Shakespeare. Just a few lines, not introduce himself. Not tell this is part of the... That actor's name?
Richard Grieco.
Bazing!
Well, in that case, I'm there.
You're so there, I'm early. Yeah. But he won't even announce. You just have to randomly run into him.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so there's not even a Twitter feed you can follow going, where is Ryan at the moment? Where's he going to be? He's just going to wander around.
Richard Grieco, Shakespeare Dinner Theater.
I'm
Tell
loving
me
it.
It's not brilliant.
I love it.
I love it. It's not brilliant. At his house. That's the other thing. You just come over to his place. He'll cook, and then he'll do some Shakespeare.
Dean, before you go to London,
yes,
post 2012 games, summer games, you have a trip coming up.
I do.
I think I'm coming with you.
Yes.
To the Pacific Northwest.
We're off to the Pacific Northwest to invade.
Seattle. Where we'll be showing The Truth Is Out There at the Northwest Film Forum on Tuesday, 22nd November at 7 p.m.
Yes.
An intimate venue.
Lovely.
Only
venue.
About 45 seats available. And, boy, my voice cracked. I told myself I wasn't going to cry.
And now you are.
And then on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, or as they call it in Vancouver, Thursday.
That's right. It's going to be our show in Vancouver.
At the Rio Theater.
Broadway and commercial.
The glorious Rio Theater will be showing The Truth Is Out There, doing a little bit of a Q&A. And then afterwards, you will be reuniting with many of your old improv comedy cohorts, and you'll be putting on a big, big show.
A big comedy show with the old gang that I started with, including Gary Jones, Randy Schooley, Ellie Harvey, Ian Boothby, Roger Fredericks. Big names in the Vancouver comedy scene.
Get to see my old friend Roman Danilo?
Roman Danilo, unfortunately, has a gig that night. I know. He really wanted to perform.
Roman Danilo is dead to me.
That man is dead to me.
I was hoping he would get to see the film.
I was hoping, too.
He's in the movie.
I told him he's in it. He said, what? What do I know about conspiracies? I said, you don't.
It's the story that he tells about you, which is one of the best parts of the movie.
I know. And there's a picture on his Facebook that is actually looks like him impersonating me in that story. You'll have to see it.
Oh, that's funny.
Go to Roman Danilo's Facebook page. Look at his photos. There's one. I've actually commented on it, so it's easy to find.
Of course, in addition to our website, chillpackhollywood.com,
yes,
where you can download and stream so many episodes we've done and even subscribe via iTunes or really simple syndication. On this show's description, we'll have links to both those upcoming appearances. As well as maybe do our Actors E appearance if anybody wants to watch
Why
us.
Why not?
It's a lot of fun.
It's hilarious.
I want to watch you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's much like this, only there's a third person asking us questions about inappropriate movies that we did.
It was really fun. I don't know,
but it's just like
learned anything at all about us.
I know she did her research, but she just said my character Richard, which kind of threw me because I always know my character. It was like Langley for the first 8 seasons.
She's very formal.
So it was like, and tell us about your character Richard. I'm like, who the hell's Richard?
Richard Grieco.
Richard Grieco? Is that dude? No, you know, it was. It was strictly Richard Ringo Langley was, but everybody just called me Ringo Langley.
And then, of course, everybody can also find out where we're going to be, where the film will be screening, both at our official website for the film, truth-is-out-there.com,
yep,
where they can also order different versions of the film, order the digital download version of the film, truth-is-out-there.com. And if they become likers of the film on Facebook, facebook.com/truthmovie, we post everything there as well about our upcoming appearances.
Fantastic.
So check that out. Now, Jody, when you decided to come and stay in Santa Monica, were you aware that the entire world of film distribution was going to be descending upon Santa Monica at the time you were there?
No, I didn't realize.
Which hotel are you at?
Not in a hotel. I'm staying with a friend.
Oh, excellent. Well, you're near the American Film.
Market.
Yes, huge. AFM.
Mm-hmm.
Is going on right now. I think it's maybe the last day today. And as you know, we've even, I think, once done a podcast from that poolside at the AFM.
Yeah, that went to hell. But anyway, But the point is that this is where the tire meets the road in terms of film industry. This is everybody who's got a movie gets a little hotel room, and then all these other guys who are from other countries come to buy those films to show it in their country.
Cool.
And it is like a Turkish bazaar in terms of the haggling that goes on, the people with the posters, with their wares. Trauma Films is always there. They're showing films that you never heard of.
Films
you never heard of.
That produce films, that rep films, that distribute films. And then there's buyers from around the world representing individual territories. And Increasingly, as the middle ground of film drops away, the middle
right.
budgets, and as the studios are making fewer and fewer films, this is where the majority of films that get seen around the world get decided, get because a lot of these haven't even been made that are being sold.
Right.
They're being sold on the basis of...
getting that money for the production.
Right.
It's
or
selling
at
your foreign
least
rights.
Getting commitments to sales so that they can find out whether it's worth making this movie in the first place.
To figure out what your budget's going
right.
to be.
And they may not honor those sales down the road because they may decide, oh, we could have sold this for much more. Screw you.
Yes. And or the other way can go, too. This thing sucks. We're not buying it.
So along with Berlin, along with Cannes, this is really one of the three big, big deals in international film finance and distribution. And, of course, I worked this event as a filmmaker several times and then in my capacity as managing director of a consortium of international film distribution companies, I worked it as well. And I became very aware at that event in particular that filmmakers are whiny, needy children with senses of entitlement.
Wow.
And film distributors are criminal scumbags. And not only did I realize that, but I realized at that moment that I was now both of these.
Yes, you were. And nothing's changed.
Because it really, I mean, you've been there a couple of times.
I have.
It really does just bring out the worst in both groups.
Yeah, absolutely. You become so desperate to sell whatever little DVD you made to guys in suits that are walking past you where, I don't know, even if they represent the country they say they represent, but if they have a check, I don't care where the money came from. I'm taking it because I'm selling this thing down your throat. It's like
it
becomes
really
horse, horse, horse.
It is so far removed from any joy of creating and any love of film itself. I mean,
right.
it really, this is, you know, that the analogy that I love, right? If you can't stand to see how the sausage gets made, right?
Do not stand
to see. This is just a sausage factory.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. The one thing you never hear at AFM is it any good? Nobody says that. Is this a good, how is this film? Is it you know, a quality piece?
Yeah, I really loved it.
I really thought you did a great job putting this together. No, you never hear that. It's just like, who's in it? What name can I put on the marquee? Whatever.
Can we redo the artwork?
And is it already dubbed in a foreign language? Or
what year was it made?
Yeah.
Lie. How much did it cost? Lie. I mean, it's just horrible.
So if you're in Santa Monica, please check it out. Feel all
I
free.
Did. I walked past the one of the American film industry.
Normally at Marion Davis's old place that William Randolph Hearst bought for her, mm-hmm. now converted to the Lowe's Hotel.
Okay.
But that was her original place when they were having that illicit affair. And Mr. Hearst, whose actual newspaper office is just three blocks down from here, you can see where he started his media empire and then moved out to Sam Simeon, which is now a lovely tourist thing where you can go through his castle.
Mm-hmm.
When he was having this illicit affair with this actress, whom he met just over here, up Broadway.
And
that's part
of
the tour.
At a time when it seems like all you hear about are the movies that make $100 million, $200 million, how much did it make opening weekend, all of this. So much of the ink is spent on this. And yet fewer and fewer of the movies are involved in those discussions.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about at the AFM movies with big, big stars that most people will never hear.
It's true.
They are not made to play in theaters in the U.S. They're not made to play really in theaters
at all,
much of anywhere. And yet they have big, big names in them. And these are most of the movies that get made. And it's only going to be more that way when you... I mean, look at any news story about where the business is at right now. I mean, it is safe to say that young men in their late teens and early 20s who have been the backbone of box office...
For
decades.
Decades now?
Since Star Wars,
for
have
sure.
Have disappeared entirely from the multiplexes. They have not gone in any number to see a movie in more than 3 months.
And I wonder why. There's so much else to do.
And evidence of this is, I know you saw Tower Heist, so I'm interested in what you have to say, but this movie was beat at the box office in its opening weekend by Puss in Boots in its second weekend. Puss in Boots had an opening last weekend that was considered lackluster.
Yeah.
And this is reminiscent of in August, right about the time when... again, young men disappeared from the multiplexes, where Cowboys and Aliens, a $220 million tentpole film with James Bond, Indiana Jones, directed by the guy from Iron Man,
the popular comic book,
Ron Howard, got beat by the Smurfs. And this is being compared to the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, were those people staying away from the multiplexes missing anything, Dean Hagler?
They missed three laughs. Three laughs in 2 hours. And those laughs you saw in the trailer, anyway. And in fact, the trailer was better cut than the actual movie. The timing was better in the trailer. So you actually got better laughs in the trailer. So, in fact, you did not miss anything. Unless you were interested in some therapy has had an effect on Eddie Murphy. Because I got to swear, he's somehow disconnected, or he's so weird in this movie. He's doing the same sort of comedy stuff, but it's got this veneer of some sort of psychosis to it. So it seems that he's either not in the same room with the other actors, mm-hmm. which I've heard is how he actually works, mm-hmm. that he actually sends a stand-in and all the actors talk to the stand-in.
Although,
and then
clearly
he comes in
this one, there's enough shots and things like
with
that.
With Ben Stiller, but there's not a single two-shot with him and Matthew Broderick. There's not, other than the restaurant scene.
What about Gabby Sidibe?
That looks like it's all one-ers.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
even
one of the funny moments.
That's one of the funny moments. But it's funny because they're both, you know, kind of disconnected, and they sort of connect for a second. But that's funny in the trailer, and that's funnier in the trailer than the movie. And the movie is just kind of weird.
Eddie Murphy ever a big deal in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, he has been for quite a long time. I mean, not recently, I don't suppose.
Right.
But, I mean, Beverly Hills Cop, one of my favorite films.
Right. These were huge there as well.
Did Trading Places do big business there too?
I think so. I mean, it's not one of... I was really young when that film came out. So, like I was with Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, hey, we're not accusing you of anything.
I like
Raw,
80s classics.
The Raw, the live video performance of him, no.
No, I don't think I've seen any of his
do stand-up.
This is what put, I was listening to Jody's show, because I love, as I've mentioned on this before, I love that not only, you know, getting to be on Alex's Midweek Drive each week on Siren 107.3 FM, but
good.
I get up in time to listen to the whole show, and then I end up listening to Jody and Jack's show, and so I spend the day listening to, you know,
UK radio.
Fantastic fun. One day, and Jody knows this, liver spots burst onto my hands as their pick of the week, their revival pick of the week, or their theater pick of the week was Lion King 3D had just been released, and Jack Harrison, her co-presenter, reveals that that's the first movie he ever saw.
Oh, dear Lord.
At the pictures. At the cinema.
Still.
Yeah.
That's still shocking.
He's like, you know, he's a mature student, but he's a lot younger than me.
As you know, mine was a Disney film as well.
Yes, it was.
It was about a football-kicking mule. Gus.
That's right.
Lion King was the first movie he saw in pictures.
Ouch. Wow. Gosh.
I think possibly mine was My Little Pony.
My Little Pony, the movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or maybe The Land Before Time.
There was the opera. For the opera writers, I think that's a great opera, actually, My Little Pony, the opera.
You know, other showbiz news that reveals what trouble they're having.
They're having, not us.
The average ticket price dropped.
Finally.
Well, yeah, you say finally. You know, I mean, it dropped from a bit over $8 per average ticket to a little under $8 per average ticket. Of course, what's misleading is the idea that they're actually lowering tickets.
Yeah.
What I believe that this indicates, if they really parsed the numbers, is that fewer and fewer people are actually being suckered by 3D films.
By 3D films, mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the average ticket price of tickets sold.
Sold, not versus
not
3D.
Not offered.
Yeah.
Right. So nobody's going to 3D anymore.
But I've got to believe that at some point ticket prices might actually level downwards a little bit.
What happened to 250 Tuesdays? Remember that? That always was like, got me into theaters all the time. That's how I saw Blade Runner, for crying out loud.
Well, I hope this happens in the UK as well, because ticket prices are so expensive.
They really are expensive.
They really are, yeah. I mean, a lot of people go for the mobile network Orange. Does a deal, 2-for-1 on a Wednesday. Cinemas are always packed out on a Wednesday. There's people queuing out the door. You know, any other day you go, it's just completely dead.
So wait, Orange, the phone network,
mm-hmm.
gives a 2-for-1 deal?
Uh-huh.
So what are they doing? They're like covering the cost of that second ticket?
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow, that's kind of a smart marketing move.
It is. I mean, it's well known in the UK. And a lot of people, I mean, a lot of my friends and myself as well, will only go to the cinema on a Wednesday because otherwise it's like, I think it's $8 to $9. Pounds,
yes, never mind that. 18 to $20.
Yeah. This is why we love setting up, if we can, free screenings at colleges.
Exactly.
Right? So that young people have a chance to see the film.
See our film.
And,
not any
and
film.
And maybe we'll do something in Lincolnshire.
I think you should. I think the University of Lincoln would love
that
to have
it. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Well, if you're there for the Sci-Fi Film Festival and I'm there at the Olympia Cultural Festival.
You'll be there a couple
months
later. I don't think
so. We can sort of space it. You stay. Yeah.
During the Olympics.
You stay.
I'll stay for a month during the Olympics.
Yeah, if you could do that. I'm sure that wouldn't be a dent in the pocket.
That won't be expensive.
I don't think so.
Hey, you can stay with me. It's
look
fine.
At that. Jody just covered you.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just going to camp in the studio.
Are you living anywhere near the Olympics?
Not near the Olympics.
No.
Well, no, it's about two and a half hours on the train.
Oh,
perhaps a bit less than that, which, of course, is nothing really compared to...
So you're nowhere near the DLR line.
Where did you grow up, Jody?
I grew up in Lincoln.
You grew up in Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did.
See, I've become fascinated by Lincoln. I research it.
Uh-huh. Stalk it.
Oh, my God. The star of the big culinary fortnight is Lincoln. It is.
What?
In the UK. I mean, I would
what?
Read about the culinary fortnight.
What is culinary fortnight?
It celebrates the culinary excellence, if we can call it that, of the United Kingdom.
Every fortnight?
And for 2 weeks. It's a festival around the country that spotlights
different
cuisine.
Cuisine.
And Lincoln is kind of the shining star when it comes.
Really?
I think because there is a lot of farm. Around
there certainly
agriculture.
Is, yeah. It's
so
very
the
rural
restaurants
area.
Manage to
have fresh,
have
local food.
Local grown, and, which is always the key to really.
Is that a big movement there, local vores? Food has to be sourced within 100 kilometers of the restaurant?
I know there's a lot of, in fact, one of our Midweek Drive guests, Sarah Gayton's got a big project on at the minute trying to, for the Olympics, all the food there is going to be like British produced.
Ah, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
see.
Yeah, there are some people. I don't know if it's an absolutely massive really, but
when we go to Vancouver, you'll see how crazy it's become.
You know what I find interesting is people who hail from Lincoln.
Yeah.
I'm going to mention three names.
Okay. I mean,
anywhere in the UK, you can come up with an impressive list
sure.
of people who hail from there. But I was struck by, because these people are all relatively the same age, okay, Jim Broadbent, okay. Oscar-winning
yeah,
actor.
Yeah, I knew that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Margaret Thatcher.
What?
Yes. She does
and
in fact hail from
the current Archbishop of Canterbury.
Really?
It's true.
I didn't know
and
that.
They're all roughly the same. So I love. So I just bring this up because I love the idea that they were all like classmates.
Just hanging out. Playing in the playground.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I've
got to be an actor.
I mean,
I've got to run the country.
Three people rising to the ultimate heights of their individual professions, and they were all like snot-nosed kids together.
All in Lincoln.
In the
magical
Lincoln
60s.
Lincolnshire. Public classroom.
Ah, see?
From there.
Well,
hey,
there
look, we're halfway through the show. We've
we
got
are.
To get to the things
we
that make
done
your
anything.
Chill Pack Hollywood Hour your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And,
right.
of course, one of the key of these are celebrity deaths.
Oh, yes. Are you talking Andy Rooney?
I'll let
no,
you
Mickey.
Talk Andy Rooney.
Okay.
Because I can't really say anything that won't get me in trouble.
Ah.
So why don't you talk Andy Rooney, and I'll talk the other celebrity death of
At 92 years old, Andy Rooney, who was the crotchety guy at the end of 60 Minutes, he sort of did his last one just like 3 months ago. He retired
I thought it was a month.
Was it a month?
Ago, maybe. Now,
I thought it was about 3 months
Rooney
ago.
No, I don't know.
We have
know
this new show called 60 Minutes. It's been on forever.
Longest running show on television
probably,
history here.
Yeah.
At
the end, this guy did 2 minutes of...
A few minutes with Andy Rooney.
A few minutes with Andy Rooney.
This guy was a cantankerous old man who would basically scream into the camera, "Hey, you kids, get out of my yard."
Yeah, but he would do like almost stand-up bits.
Stand-up
you ever
bits?
Notice when yeah. you put your sock on? The
What's
thing?
The deal with pencils?
Deals? Yes, it was like this stand-up act that was like pre-observational.
But he became kind of this caricature that comedians would go after 30 years ago.
I know. You were doing Andy Rooney impersonation.
He was a crazy old cantankerous man 30 years ago.
And he wasn't trimming his eyebrows either. So the eyebrows grew longer and longer for the 92 years.
But was sleeping face down in a pan of bleach, it looked like, because of those eyebrows. Anyway, we're not really remembering the dead so well.
No.
How were you influenced by Andy Rooney, Dean Haglund?
All my stand-up changed after I saw his You Ever Notice and Don't You Hate? Then I started doing improv after that. Because after he basically weekly ate up all the bits that you could possibly think of. And it just became anytime you were on stage going, Never Notice or Don't You Hate? In your stand-up act, you felt like Andy
Rooney. It is the end of an era.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Although, quite honestly, I was ready for the end of the 60 Minutes era decades ago.
Decades ago. I know.
The other celebrity death, and I think we can call a celebrity because he was an important figure in the business of show, and that is Mr. Gil Cates.
Oh yeah,
he died at 77 this week, and he only made a handful of films as a director and a producer. The most important of which was again more than 30 years ago.
You didn't see it.
The Oscar nominated film adaptation of I Never Sang for My Father with Melvin Douglas and Gene Hackman.
Right.
And what I find appropriate about him having made that is that his true love was the theater.
Of course.
And he indeed, aside from his credits, has a really impressive legacy that he leaves behind. He's the founder of the Geffen Playhouse in Westwood.
I did not know that.
Yes, and that's one of our true cultural jewels in this city.
If you want to see great theater while you're here in Los Angeles, Jody, mm-hmm. the Geffen Playhouse is the place to go.
Well, I was in Westwood last night, actually.
Oh, you were? By UCLA, so you may have seen it, actually. It's a mm-hmm. lovely little older building amongst all that. Well, there's still a lot of history there, but there's mm-hmm. There's one building in particular. It's a lovely theater. It's the Geffen Playhouse.
He was the president of the DGA in the 1980s.
Didn't know that.
He was dean of the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television.
Well, while you were there,
Mr.
Mr. Ivy League Snot knows you.
He produced 14 Oscar telecasts.
Yeah.
And was responsible for bringing Billy Crystal to the show.
Oh, see, now that was a smart move.
That was a very smart move.
Did he bring Rob Lowe in? Was that him?
Maybe.
No. That was the other guy. What was his name?
Oh, yeah, Carr, right?
Yeah, Alan Carr brought in Rob Lowe. That's the low point of the Oscars, I would think. Unless Eddie Murphy screws it up this year, but which he might. I don't know. I'm worried. I'm worried about the Oscars.
And if I could talk about Gil Cates for a moment.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I just was on a tangent.
Father of four, including a very talented director, Gil Cates Jr.
Do we know him?
Of course, the most important bit of his legacy, Gil Cates was the uncle of the incredibly beautiful Phoebe Cates.
I knew that.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Any excuse to talk about Phoebe Cates, because we don't get that excuse very often.
Yeah, well, I've not seen her around for a while.
Not enough.
Not enough.
Fred, I think.
Not since I got the restraining order.
Right.
So Gil Cates dead, 77.
There you go.
And those are your celebrity deaths on your Chillpack Hollywood Hour.
Are we doing an Oscar show again, by the way? Are we doing a big Oscar show from now?
We're production planning months ahead.
Yeah, well, maybe we should have a party here on the rooftop.
Okay, I think we've got enough to cover today. We could have that discussion when we're kind of
Suddenly dawned on me, the Oscars is coming up, but we have nothing planned.
Not really. What dawns on me is that we've got a top 10 show long before that,
and we
have to see 10 films.
I haven't seen even 10 films yet.
Oh, my God.
I know.
You should definitely see them.
I know. I don't know. And I canceled my Netflix account in protest. And I took all my cash out of Chase Bank in protest. Screw the man.
How about Reed Hastings, the CEO? First of all, Netflix, which is still raking in money hand over fist. But again, in the strange economic times in which we live, it doesn't matter what your bottom line is. It only matters what your stock is valued at.
Right.
And Netflix, and we'd kind of read the writing on the wall 2.5 years ago when we said, you know, Netflix is going to be in trouble because of some of their business practices. Their stock has plummeted 70% August or September.
Yeah.
But it's not helped, I don't think, by Reed Hastings, the CEO, selling off 5,000 shares of his own stock in Netflix each week.
It's a desperate attempt.
That does not send a good message.
No, I got to dump this crap. It's going to be worthless.
All those emails we get from Reed Hastings saying, hey, Netflix is better than ever. P.S. Yes. Want to buy some shares? I got some shares.
They're filling up my trunk of my car.
All right.
Free shares when you watch a movie.
But Dean Haglund, it's time for your Chillpack Hollywood Hour Lawsuit of the Week.
Lawsuit of the Week.
One of our newest and most beloved
right.
or most tolerated segments.
Most tolerated by
the
us.
Of the week. And there's always so many to choose from.
There is.
I always try to pick one that really kind of is fascinating to me for some reason. And this one I just got such delight over that I think if you could look at my notes, you would know I used 3 exclamation marks. Paramount Pictures, one of the most proud studios, I think.
Historically.
More than 100. I think they're celebrating their 100th year.
Your 100th
right
year.
Now, 100th
right.
year.
They started in 1911.
Wow.
And
I know.
They are suing over the rights to the 50-year-old La Dolce Vita.
What?
Yeah. They're suing to prove that they own the rights to La Dolce Vita. This is a studio that, if they had a chance to make a brand new Fellini classic right now, they would sue you for suggesting it.
I'm going to go in and pitch that just to get a lawsuit
but
on my ass.
They demand to be recognized as the sole owners of the 50-year-old La Dolce Vita.
So theoretically, what must have happened?
They are suing International Media Films.
Okay.
Which, in addition to suing them over a claim that they have the rights and over releasing versions of La Dolce Vita, also produced a porn version of La Dolce Vita in 2007.
Oh, let me think of the title. Le Dolce Leda. Le Vita.
Please don't think of the title.
Okay, sorry.
Because we don't want ourselves.
Le Dildo Vita. Le Dildo Vita. It's got to be.
Oh, my God.
Who's with me? Letters to Dean Haglund. Follow me on Twitter.
I don't want our own show to end up in the segment known as your Chilpack Hollywood Hour lawsuit of the week.
Not with Lady Dildo Vita. Come
so
on.
I think I did pretty good finding that one.
I think so. Wait a sec. You're in foreign distribution. You know how libraries go. I sell a film to another company. I sign a document that says you now have a 100% exclusive rights. Surely there is a paper trail a mile long from 1956 or whenever Fellini directed this up till present day that would show the direct rights. How would that get mistaken in any capacity?
The first thing I would start with is in 1961, I don't think we lived in quite the legal litigious society that we do today.
No, but we weren't handing off our property, film
Fellini,
properties.
Fellini, though, was that rarity in that he was a giant of cinema around the world.
Okay.
Remember, La Dolce Vita was in the top 10 U.S. box office for that year, a foreign language film being in the top 10.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. I mean, he was a big deal.
Way so hipper back
these
then.
These films were truly international co-productions. So your financing and the companies involved represented many different countries. And right there, you are setting the stage, I think, for some really ugly battles. And it becomes very difficult to accumulate those rights except through, as you point out, library purchases.
Right.
However, we don't know, again, going back to the original investor agreements, how long did those agreements last? And what rights were those financiers given? What rights did the Fellini estate have? I mean, it can be
a labyrinth. Well, and you know, often what they do is throw these lawsuits in just to try and get a piece of the pie, even if they know they don't have a leg to stand on, because it's such a labyrinth and such a, as you said, there's hardly the legal framework that we have today that it's easy to go back and go, yeah, no, I got a piece of that. And then they have to go and interpret maybe sometimes one-sentence clauses. I know that was the big problem when we were trying to talk about doing this thing at Fox that was sort of a retro TV show. And they said, no, your clauses back then are so thin that they're so open to interpretation that nobody even wants to go into it legally.
And look, far be it for me to take the side of Paramount, but if you're going to maybe prevent future porn versions of Fellini films through your lawsuit, I'm with you. You know, because my greatest fear is that porn version of the truth is out there.
Are you sure it hasn't already been made?
I think it has been made.
Which is available on the 2-disc collector's edition.
See what you did.
See what I did.
Yes.
All right. Finally, we've got so much to discuss in terms of development news in Hollywood.
Yes, we do.
We talked about the great cast for the new James Bond film last week. Jody, have you heard about? Are you a James Bond fan? You are from the UK, so you kind of
I am.
Law.
You sort of have to. I mean, I grew up watching a lot of the James Bond films, but I haven't seen any of the new ones.
Favorite James Bond?
Name it.
Who is he?
Well,
not political. You don't have to be politically correct.
Roger Moore, okay. Really?
You grew up in that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course, yeah. That makes sense.
I'm not sure Timothy Dalton was.
Nah. But no Sean Connery for you? The, you know, the Scots?
Well.
That's your dad's.
That's your dad's James Bond.
Yeah, yeah.
It's too.
I mean, I haven't seen any of the ones with Daniel Craig, but I'm tempted to.
Oh,
yeah.
The
I should
Royale,
go and watch
that
them,
first,
really.
Go see the Casino first Royale. One that he did, mm-hmm. Maybe the best Bond film of all time. We've talked about this a lot on the
yes.
show.
Yes, we've got
one,
over our top 10 Bond films.
This one that they just started shooting has this extraordinary cast. Of course, Dame Judi Dench, but Ralph Fiennes, Javier Bardem, Albert Finney.
Albert
just
Finney
an incredible,
is a surprising
incredible cast.
Yeah, but doesn't this film, it's the first James Bond with a beard. Is that right?
With a beard? He's wearing a beard?
Yeah.
I did not hear that. Is that true?
Oh,
I'm sure I read something.
Oh, dear.
On but the internet, which may or may not be true.
Maybe he's just got out of prison and he's going to shave it later.
Daniel Craig, the first James Bond with a beard.
Wow. Well, he was the first blue-eyed James Bond.
True.
And when he first got hired... those UK newspapers that didn't refer to him as James Bland referred to him as James Blonde.
Ah, see?
And then, lo and behold, the first actor to play James Bond to be nominated for a BAFTA for Best Actor for the part. So he got a certain amount of redemption. Anyway, the cast in the James Bond film, Skyfall, has nothing on the cast in the currently shooting Django Unchained, Quentin Tarantino's new movie.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the cast for this?
No. Did everybody line up?
Jamie Foxx is playing the title role. The villain is played by Leonardo DiCaprio.
Wow.
Jamie Foxx partners with Christoph Waltz. Some of the other major players in the film with key roles. Don Johnson, because
wow.
Quentin loves giving comebacks.
Giving
right?
comebacks, this could be it.
Dennis Christopher from Breaking Away is in it. But you've got Kurt Russell, Samuel L. Jackson, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Kerry Washington. Of course, he's a big supporter of indie cinema, so the Indie Spirit-nominated Misty Upham, who we loved in Frozen
oh, yeah.
River,
yeah, yeah.
is in it. I mean, this cat, it just goes on, and I cannot wait.
When's that supposed to come out?
He's shooting it now, so probably fall of next year.
Can't wait.
No, I can't wait. Looking forward to that.
Me too. And of course, we've been, you're standing in the location of the Batman Forever. We were actually not allowed in our pool
mm-hmm.
right here not a week ago because the Batcopter or the Batwing was actually
wow.
flying right over top of this here. So you'll actually see where you are right now in the upcoming Christopher Nolan Batman
amazing.
Movie. Isn't that amazing?
I'm looking
what
forward
an
to that.
Amazing intuitive segue. Because Christian Bale was next on my list of development news. He is doing not one, but two more Terrence Malick films. Now,
wow.
when did Terrence Malick become the most prolific filmmaker?
I don't know.
This was a guy in his first decade in cinema made...
One?
Well, no, he made Days of Heaven?
Days of Heaven, yeah.
But he did Badlands 5 years before that.
Oh,
but
right.
then did not make another movie for 20 years. Until Thin Red Line.
Thin Red Line.
Then waited quite a while longer before doing The New World. Just had Tree of Life come out. And he's got two films in production right now.
Wow.
And
must be easier to make films now.
They both star Christian Bale. Knight of Cups is one of them. And Lawless, which is almost finished, which co-stars Christian Bale and which stars Ryan Gosling.
Wow.
Good
for him.
That's kind of amazing. What inspires a guy who was so sort of reclusive and sort of not, I mean, he just reclusive in the sense that he didn't court Hollywood at all.
Yeah.
And said, I'm fine making a movie once every 20 years. Now, you know what? I want to make two a year. Three
well,
a year.
Because now he's much more a household name. So I imagine it's easier and the studios are sort of.
Well, the irony is that staying away for 20 years gave him the cachet to be able to do whatever he wants whenever he wants to now.
A lesson to all you kids out there. Do something amazing, then hang out. That's my career plan that I'm doing right
Sounds
now.
Sounds like a good plan.
It is, yeah. Just sitting poolside waiting for that phone to ring. It's going to happen.
Now, speaking of Gosling, his Logan's Run remake...
Oh, dear God.
...is finally moving forward
yeah.
with his director from Drive.
Really?
Yeah, so this could be a
that
really
be cool.
dark dystopian film.
Film, finally.
The kind of thing that the original Logan's Run was not.
was not. Yeah, you know, seeing Ferret Fawcett and
but
Michael York. Yes.
Michael York. Jody, what are your thoughts? Mike, I'm going to be totally Alex right now.
Yeah.
randomly throw out bizarre questions.
Good.
I can't wait till he hears
Michael
that
York.
Comment.
I'm not sure who...
Jody, Michael York, thoughts?
If I know who Michael York is,
are you
what
kidding?
Else has he been in?
That's delightful. That's part of the Michael York scenario. Three
Michael
Musketeers.
York, Three
we
Musketeers.
Can name so many wonderful films that he was 1970s. In before you were born.
Yes. Okay.
But he played Basil Exposition in the Austin Powers movies.
Yes.
Oh.
Basil Exposition. The blonde hair, proper elocution.
Yeah.
I just saw him at the Long Beach Opera, actually, doing a couple of operas. And
well,
I think
I know who it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
You kind of know him.
Yeah.
But
now, when we talk about dystopian sci-fi landscapes, of course, we always think Blade Runner.
Yes, because we're
steady. And did you see that in a Wall Street Journal interview, Ridley Scott not only confirmed that he's directing the next Blade Runner, but that it is a sequel to Blade Runner, not in the universe, not a prequel like the
idea
alien
that we
follow-up that he's doing right now.
Yeah.
But it's a sequel, although it will probably be without Rick Deckard.
Ah.
His character played by Harrison Ford.
So it's a sequel taking it after 2014.
I think it was 2019.
Yes, November 14th, 2019.
So,
or was it November 19th, 2014?
Wow.
I can't remember.
I don't know, but I was told there'd be no math.
There's math.
Again, in the category of early 80s classics and Casino Royale, you have Martin Campbell, the director of Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Yay! And the director of The Green Lantern. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
He's on board to direct the big screen adaptation of The Fall Guy.
Wow.
Lee Majors'
legendary series that he created. As
what can one say about this big screen adaptation of The Fall Guy aside from the wait is over?
Right. Here's the story about a stuntman who solves crime in between shooting
What's
films.
Better?
You know what
I'm
going
to do? Am I right in thinking that he had an assist, like a sidekick called Jodie?
Yeah.
Jodie? Heather Locklear.
Yes, he did. Heather
Locklear. Yeah, famous.
Or that's right. Heather Thomas.
No, it was Heather Locklear.
It was Heather Thomas.
Heather
Thomas. Heather
Thomas.
Heather Locklear was
on Baywatch.
T.J. Hooker and Dynasty or something like that.
Jeez.
She had two shows, but Heather Thomas
was. But yes, Jodie.
But Jodie was.
Well, you know, if they're looking for somebody to
to
play the new Jodie, then I'm here.
See, that's
yeah,
exactly how they cast
LA.
Movies in
yeah,
L.A.
Precisely.
It
just,
also,
are you
first
Jodie?
Of all, you know, I'm of that age where, and I've talked about this before, there was no one bigger in the entertainment landscape than Lee Majors. I mean, he was the $6 million man. He was Heath on Big Valley. He was the Fall Guy, and he sang the title song to The Fall Guy, The Ballad of the Unknown Stuntman.
I hope he sings it again.
Well, I think, rights be damned, can we, in the end credits of today's show, use a little sample from that song to close?
I think we could.
Let's do a little bit of it.
Let's do.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. It's on my iPod. Don't kid yourself.
I'm not kidding.
Finally,
the A380, the double-decker plane right overhead.
Wow.
Sorry to interrupt.
You know, TV
giant.
Reboots to movies is nothing new. But, of course, we've been having a lot of TV reboots to television.
To television. Charlie's Angels?
Which failed.
Thankfully.
Of course, Hawaii Five-0, which succeeded.
Succeeded.
And so it doesn't matter how many Charlie's Angels failures we have. The occasional success of something like Battlestar Galactica and Hawaii Five-0 seems to inspire the revisitation of these
entire
brand names.
Everything
and
you grew
one,
up with.
And apparently people are listening to their Chill Pack Hollywood Hour because the one that is being talked up the most for a potential reboot, Vulture commented on this week.
Uh-huh.
The X-Files.
No.
And this is what I said, did I not? That all the talk about an X-Files 3, which really, you know, would be such a huge surprise if this happened.
Yeah.
That really a reboot of the series is what we will live long enough to see.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, will it be with the same characters being played by new actors, or would it be a follow-up series like the one that I outlined on this show where it could focus 10 years after the invasion,
yeah,
and you've got William, the son of Mulder and Scully, fighting the future, and perhaps with the assistance of Mom and Dad.
And Mom and Dad now showing up now and then.
Exactly.
And but that there is an alien-human hybrid force to contend with, a lot more action, there'd be weapons, explosions. I could see it.
I think they should do it.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
I know. And you'd have the syndicate, and then you could even bring back Well, you can't bring back the gunman.
What are the hot shows in the UK, Jody?
Hot shows in the UK?
I'm loving Luther, by the way. Are you watching Luther on BBC?
No, you see, my problem, I don't watch that much television, but when I do, it's all American television.
That's so funny.
So, you know.
So we're stuck on British, I'm hooked on BBC America here. Mm-hmm. I just love everything coming out of there.
I'm through season two of Prime Suspect.
Oh, yeah. The original Helen Mirren one.
Oh, it's so good.
Not the American one.
No.
I'll tell you TV series I think was very short-lived. Too short-lived, if you ask me. Parker Lewis Can't Lose from the 90s. Corinne Nemec.
Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
I do remember that.
I do remember that. I don't think I ever watched it.
Oh.
Because it was so short-lived.
Yeah.
And it was a sitcom or was it a dramatic series?
No, it was a sitcom.
It was a sitcom.
Yeah.
You know what else was too short-lived? The Lone Gunman.
Lone Gunman. Just saying. Now, if there was ever a need of a reboot.
Yeah, I think the Lone Gunman should be. Definitely.
That's exactly it. That's what I'm talking.
Yeah, I know you are. I know. God bless you.
And you know all the executives that listen to Chillpack Hollywood Hour, they stay for the end. Because that's where all our best...
that's where all, we're rushing to get through stuff.
Rush to get through
we
stuff.
We really did a great job this week of getting through stuff. You know, one thing that Alex, the excellent host of the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM...
Did you say that because you know he's listening? Or
he does. He likes to close, does he not, every week with kind of an inspiring food for thought.
A
quote...
Quote of the day.
That inspires, that opens us with a sense of wonder and mystery.
Which I normally try and scribble down without much success, and I end up having to ask him.
Well, I didn't necessarily intend to honor him by stealing that idea this week.
But you
pay homage by stealing the idea. But sometimes truly inspirational quotes just have a way of finding you, do they not? Like, I saw this movie, The Lady, directed by Luc Besson, starring Michelle Yeoh and David Thewlis, about the woman who's been fighting for independence in Burma.
In Burma,
for the past several decades.
Several decades.
It is such a well-meaning biopic, and it's like booing Santa Claus to say that, boy, it's not a movie. Anyway.
I know, I pitched it to Lifetime. They said the same thing.
And I saw the Q&A with Luc Besson and Michelle Yeoh. There's 50 of us in the room with the two of these giants who I have admired for so long. And it's so kind of a pall over the room that we're all together for this movie. Anyway. But she, the main character, to survive her kind of house arrest.
For decades.
Would, from memory, because she wasn't allowed books, she would from memory write down quotes and passages that had inspired her and that meant a lot to her, and hang them, decorate her walls with these.
Lovely.
None of those quotes from Gandhi, from Mandela, from Einstein, from any of these figures moved me the way that this quote from Avery Brooks, Captain Benjamin Sisko, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, says to William Shatner in William Shatner's seminal documentary about William Shatner called The Captains.
The Captains.
Wherein he visits all of the actors who played captains on the various Star Trek franchise series.
Right.
To let them learn about, as much as they can, about William Shatner.
Of course. They need to
know. Avery Brooks, who really, in terms of how he communicates... And apparently how he lives his life and how he thinks is sort of an improvisational jazz musician.
Okay, yeah.
And he is a great, accomplished jazz musician.
Yeah.
As well as a theater professor and a brilliant man.
Yeah.
Many people find his presentation style when he's speaking, his interview style, off-putting. Some might call him a wingnut. But when you hear these words, I think you'll agree with me that he is a truly inspirational figure whose wisdom... maybe should be required reading as far away as Lincolnshire.
Maybe.
I think so.
That's right.
And the quote is, that's the what-do-you-call-it of humankind.
Wow. It's jazzy, unprepared, yet so deep.
It's an answer to a question about, I believe, the afterlife, and his answer is, that's the what-do-you-call-it of humankind.
I love it. Our next
profound
T-shirt,
yes.
Captain Benjamin Sisko.
Till next week, I'm Gene Haglund. This has been your
show. Come on, well, you're going to just sign off?
I'm going to sign off.
How about we just say hello to all our listeners on Jackalope Radio?
Oh, Jackalope Radio. Love them.
And all our listeners on the Talk Superstation.
Talk Superstation.
TalkSuperstation.com.
They're fantastic.
Of course, you can become a liker of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
Like
ChilpackHollywood.com/... No, what did I do?
Facebook.com/ChillbackHollywood.
The fact that you signed off minutes early has thrown me for a loop.
Well, how do you end after whatamacallit?
I mean, Winona Ryder is stealing our microphone cables right now. As soon as
it's Jody Orton, ladies.
Right.
It looks
she's
like
just putting the equipment away because that's part of her transatlantic internship here on her Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
I didn't know we're doing transatlantic internship.
Hey, you know, we do love hearing from our listeners either at Facebook, facebook.com/ChilpackHollywood. Write us emails, chilpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
Yes.
And remember, we created a special bonus 4th anniversary installment that will never be heard any other way.
Totally.
It includes never before heard material. It's a hilarious show. It also is actually fairly inspiring in a non-Benjamin Sisko kind of way.
Most inspiration is non-Benjamin Sisko for
And
me.
If you would like that, it's $1.29.
So
exactly
cheap.
What you would pay if you were downloading something from iTunes. And purchasing it helps ensure the fact that your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, which has come to you every week for more than 4.5 years now, will always be free and will always be available to you. So if you're interested in getting that show, please write us chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. There. I'm on Twitter. I'm twitter.com/PhilLairness. Jody, are you on Twitter?
I am. I'm only on Twitter in this last week, and I believe I'm following you now.
Wow.
What would your Twitter handle be?
Jody Orton.
Just full name?
I think.
Because I just did D. Haglund.
Oh.
So I didn't put full Dean Haglund because I thought that's really long.
Yeah.
That takes up a lot of characters.
Yeah, but Jody Orton's got kind of a nice ring to it.
Yeah, it does have a nice ring to it.
Jody Orton, have you had a reasonably interesting non-telephonic link with us here today?
I certainly have. Thank you very much.
Are you shocked at how
here.
We actually put a show together?
No, I think this is cool.
It's magical, isn't it?
Yeah, I want to do the American Dream Team on a
sunny rooftop in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have to do it in a dark studio in Lincoln.
The hell with that.
Yeah,
you want the sounds of airplanes and police helicopters.
See, the irony is that what she described is exactly what I want. I want to be in the countryside of England
in a dark studio.
I do the show over there with Alex and Jody, I always, as soon as I'm off the air, I always sigh and realize that I miss England.
That's so
and
sweet.
I always sigh and think, oh, I miss LA. So, what's wrong with this picture? Should you like it?
I think the Fall Guy is probably playing right now. The Fall Guy.
I bet it is. Until next week, I'm Dean Haglund.
Bye.
But the hardest thing I ever do is watch my leading ladies. Kiss some other guy while I'm bandaging my knee. I might fall from a tall building. I might fall.